Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to Whence Came You. This is episode number 417. It's great to be back with you this week. We've got a couple of papers as well as a new segment from illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison. This week's papers are going to be from the New Age magazine, April 1961, about a study of Freemasonry. And then, of course, we have another piece that we're calling the 12 Original Points of Masonry. And in this piece, we're going to be talking about, it's very short, just a description of many steps within the first degree and their relationship to the tribes of Israel. And, of course, illustrious Brother Harrison will be on, so we'll get into all of that in just a minute. First and foremost, again, I want to give a big shout out to all of the folks out there in Colorado. Colorado Masonry is strong. The education is outstanding, and Grand Lodge really the force behind a lot of the Masonic education, so that's just been fantastic. I also want to mention, if you haven't been over to the Midnight Freemasons in the last couple of days, please head on over there. There is a great piece called Contemplative Cornerstones, Trees by Brother Eric Marks. You know, he gives these great commentaries and kind of gives us a way to meditate about things sometimes. And he makes a great correlation between a tree and the Kabbalistic tree and how to think about things and kind of do a mindful exercise. So head on over there and check that out. If you like this kind of thing and you like these meditations, send him an email. His email address is right there on our website. Send him an email. Let him know. And I know I enjoy them. And when I do my daily meditations, if he happens to publish something, I try out what he does and what he's written for us. So always really helpful. I did also want to mention we're just like about 2 weeks away, I think, depending on quality and passing all the checks and whatever with Audible. We're going to be releasing a new Audible book very shortly here, and I think you guys will all really enjoy it. So keep your wits about you as you scroll through Facebook. Hopefully we've got some thumb-stopping content for you that you'll love to dive right into. But enough of all that. Let's get into this week's education right after this. Now comes the point in the show where I ask you to help support this show. How do we do that? Well, we have a bunch of different ways to do that today. If you head on over to WCYpodcast.com, you can click on direct donation through PayPal, which we briefly touched on in the beginning of the program. Of course, you can make that one-time donation, or you can sign up to be a monthly contributor. Contributing $2 a month, $5, or even $10 a month, whatever you choose, really helps the program out. Of course, we have a limited edition shop where you can pick up any number of items that come direct from us. Help us out by going to MasonicRevival.com, but also we have some other affiliates that are really important. Banker's Best, one of the most unique things we've ever done, is to work with Brother Levi Banker out of St. Louis, who owns his own company called Banker's Best Beard and Skincare. He's been so generous. If you head to WCYpodcast.com, click on More, then click on Banker's Best, and you can check out a bunch of the different products he's got. He's got a whole line of beard care products, skincare, oils, balms, all of this stuff, and he has been doing it a long time. He knows a lot about it. Everything is handmade, quality items. We even came up with the King Solomon's Reserve Beard Balm, which is a few years old now, but remains one of the great products that he still offers. Even the artwork on the bottle was done by a brother. The nice thing about this particular product is 50% of the proceeds come back to the program. If you're a history guy like me, then you'll be pleased to know that what makes the beard oil and balm very special is that it was made utilizing the fragrances specific to the exports of King Solomon's time and location, which is amazing. So black fig and honey is the formula. Luxurious scent, as Levi says, truly fit for our first Grand Master. If you use the promo code BBWCY357 at checkout, you'll also get a little bit of a percentage off. Please check that out. Banker's Best, or just head on over to buybankersbest.com. We also or have a code with On It, you can go to our website, click on More, then go to On It, and you can click through any of the links here, or just go to onit.com and use the promo code WCY at checkout. You'll get 10% off, and they'll send a little bit back to the program to help us out. And of course, it's business time. The book that I wrote with John T. Ruark, it is making some real waves, and people are using it and seeing success. So check that out on Amazon. You can click right to it. You can get it on Audible, Kindle, or in print, even on iBooks. And last but not least, I want to ask you to check out the Great Books program. You'll see the banner for it on the left-hand side, Intellectual Linear Progression. Use the promo code WCY, or you can just click on that link there, and you'll actually go right to the website and hear a little bit from Scott Hambrick about how awesome the program is. So that's it. I hope you guys enjoy, and thank you so much for helping us out. All right. Now, I should also mention that Levi Banker of Banker's Best is going to be all done with Banker's Best at 11:59 p.m. on October 31st. He's closing up shop, and it's not that he got run out of business or anything like that. He's just moving on to other chapters of his life, bigger and greater things, as we tend to do. So, Brother Levi, once again, thank you so much for all you've done for this program. Everyone out there should know that Brother Levi actually just sold the last two bottles of King Solomon's Reserve ever. That's right. It's all gone. It's been an amazing ride with that, but we, of course, always look forward to seeing what comes next for our brothers. And Levi is no different. I'm sure he'll do something incredible in the future. We'll be around to check it out when he does it. So the first piece this week, I talked a little bit about at the beginning. It's A Study of Freemasonry. It's by Benjamin H. West in 32nd Degree from the New Age magazine, April 1961. Now, the New Age magazine may or may not sound familiar. We've read some pieces from it before, and The New Age is actually a publication of the House of the Temple in Washington, D.C., and their tagline is Literature, Science, Education, Freemasonry, the New Age magazine. And there's issues of the New Age that go back as far as, say, 1917. But this particular article, published in 1961, here we go. God alone knows precisely how old the art and practice of Freemasonry are. Certainly, the individual lodge is the prime unit of Freemasonry. We know today that in Florida, no less than 12 Master Masons can join together to form a regular lodge. Whether this has been true from the beginning of Freemasonry, we cannot say. But we do know that all the ancient and established usages and customs of the fraternity have been faithfully and carefully preserved. To fix this more firmly in our minds, we have only to converse with visiting brethren from around the world, or read reports of our sovereign grand commander as he tells of Freemasonry in other countries. The ceremonies of Freemasonry never change, no matter where you go. Within the fraternity, there are Doubting Thomases, the probers, and searchers who cannot believe until the naked proof is presented to them. Along with them are the lovers of the craft who are continually trying to enlighten their brethren concerning the fraternity. In connection with this study of the craft, a wise Masonic churchman said that it might be helpful to start as near the beginning as possible. Then the question arises, where is the beginning? This is a logical question and deserves honest study. As is generally known among Masons, the ordinary calendar is not generally used by Freemasons in dating their official documents. They have one peculiar to themselves, differing among their various rites. Blue Lodge Masons date their documents by adding 4,000 years to the Christian era and calling it Annalucius, or Year of Light, using the abbreviation AL before the date recorded. This is known as Usher's Chronology. It came into being in Armagh, Northern Ireland, about CE 1650. And was first used in biblical computation in 1701, hence the speculative Masons, and not the operative Masons, gave Masonry this chronology. Certainly it would be neither wise nor fair to Masonry to use this chronology, even though it is now in general use among free and accepted Masons. What then can be considered as a good starting place? To go before recorded history leads only to fragmentary evidence and gives rise to doubts and speculative questions. It is known that outside the sphere of recorded events, there grew up in the ever-expanding and ever-apostatizing nations all kinds of gross, pantheistic, idolatrous, and absurd traditions. This has caused some of the great traditions of Freemasonry to be questioned, among them the Hieramic tradition. Let us then use this incident as a starting place for our research. Upon being initiated, we are told that lodges were anciently dedicated to King Solomon as he was our first most excellent Grand Master, although in reality there is no record of the existence of Masonic grand jurisdictions at or before the time of King Solomon. Josephus is known for his reliability, and the Masoretes are noted for their careful preservation of the Hebrew Scriptures. Examinations of the Masoretic text reveals that Hiram, king of Tyre, sent messengers to David and cedar trees and carpenters and masons, and they built David a house. The word used to describe masons in this passage is the same word used to describe Tubal Cain, that first well-known artificer in brass and other metals. Hence, we know that operative masons were well established from the time of Tubal Cain to the time of Hiram, king of Tyre. Joseph relates that Hiram, king of Tyre, was a great builder and had close relations with King Solomon concerning problems which were of mutual interest. This tends to confirm the belief that there was some close Masonic tie between them. Further, a passage in the first book of Kings reads as follows, quote, "And it came to pass, at the end of 20 years, when Solomon had built the two houses, the house of the Lord and the king's house, now Hiram, the king of Tyre, had furnished Solomon with cedar trees and fir trees, and with gold, according to all his desire, that then King Solomon gave Hiram 20 cities in the land of Galilee. And Hiram came out from Tyre to see that the cities which Solomon had given him, and they pleased him not. And he said, What cities are these which thou hast given me, my brother? And he called them the land of Cabal unto this day. And Hiram sent to the king 60 talents of gold." Notice here the close relationship which Hiram had with Solomon, quote, "according to all his desire," end quote, plus the fact that even in his displeasure about the cities he called Solomon my brother. This is no accident on the part of the writer, because there is another Hebrew word used for brother, which also means friend. The relationship was obviously upon more than a friendly basis and could have been on a Masonic basis. Further evidence of this possible Masonic relationship is given in regard to the name of Hiram. Some confusion exists as to the actual form of the name. Josephus calls it Hiram. In the biblical account, it occurs as Hiram and Huram. Philologists claim that the name is undoubtedly Phoenician and is equivalent to Ahim or Ahiram, which means brother of the exalted one or brother is exalted. Names of this type are especially common in Phoenician, such as Abibal and Abiram. Similar instances of the dropping of the initial letter Aleph occur in Hebrew and in Phoenician. This gives added reason to believe that there existed a strong Masonic relationship, for Hiram was not a blood relative of Solomon, and also that the tribe of Asher did not conquer the Phoenicians and bring them into subjection when the Hebrews entered their land. Examining the etymology of the name, one finds that it means freeborn or noble. This gives added evidence of a Masonic connection as well, for in those days only operative Masons were free to come and go and receive wages. The remainder of the workmen were bondsmen or serfs, who received no wages and were under a taskmaster, an arrangement that continued on beyond Solomon's day. However, Solomon and Hiram must have had a brotherly covenant, which was later forgotten by their progenitors. Such evidence seems overwhelmingly to indicate a Masonic relationship. With the addition of the artificer named Hiram Abiff, we find a threefold Masonic relationship. The Hebrew writer describes all the qualities of an operative Mason in telling about Hiram Abiff. Hiram Abiff was the son of a Mason who had died and left a widow. Solomon was particularly concerned in employing this Masonic brother and gave to him the important task of making the two brazen pillars called Jachin and Boaz. Certainly no profane artisan would understand the importance which King Solomon placed upon these two pillars. Most biblical writers have been confused concerning the name of Hiram Abi. The early translators gave it a genitive meaning of my father or his father. The Revised Standard Version has rendered his name as Huram Abi, which is a transliteration of the Hebrew. This helps to give meaning in English, but it still does not explain the character of Hiram, or that in Hebrew there are two names, Huram and Abi, with Huram preceded by a lamed. For the profane translator, this is confusing, but for one with a Masonic background, the confusion is easily resolved. Hiram is a man of eminence and the principal architect sent by King Hiram to King Solomon. He is called Huram in the second book of Chronicles, where he also has the title of Ab, or master, given to him. Thus, there was a Masonic triumvirate at the building of the temple. There is not much more said concerning Hiram Abiff than that he helped with the building of the temple. However, there is good reason to believe that King Solomon performed other work which included Hiram Abiff. In this first book of Kings, we read as follows, quote, "And the rest of the acts of Solomon, and all that he did, and his wisdom, and they not written in the book of the acts of Solomon?" It seems that there was a book called the Acts of Solomon, which has now vanished. How long this book existed and what it contained is unknown. Certainly the tradition of Hiram Abiff must have been included because of the strong Masonic relationship which existed between King Solomon, King Hiram of Tyre, and Hiram Abiff of Tyre. Most of this would be open to conjecture because of the insufficient facts. It might well be, however, that the Hiramic tradition is genuine and was transmitted to us, the speculatives, from the operative period. So that's the end of this paper, and I think it's a good paper, but it's fairly easy to note today just the many parts of this paper that, like, if you presented this today, it's probably a really bad idea to not present this without some sort of additional commentary, because it's just unfactual. The many references, I mean, it's fun to read, right? But the many references to say that it has to be Masonic because of the Masonic words, that's just circular logic, right? If we read the Jewish Encyclopedia, there's some additional information on Hiram. Some of this is confirmed in terms of the spelling of Hiram Abiff. I would notably talk about the secret books of Pike, where he refers to Qumran as the true name of Hiram. There's the tradition of Hiram Abiff being taken into the fire when the molten sea engulfs him, and he travels into a world where he talks to the jinn. All of these things, but this is all fancy, and really, to end the paper by saying it could be that the Hiramic tradition is genuine is irresponsible. But it's a fun paper, and I think we all agree that, you know, if Hiram Abiff did exist, we certainly don't know what happened to him, because the Bible doesn't tell us. And generally, also, we should really just make a brief mention here of Josephus. The paper references Josephus with this wonderful kind of air of authority. And Josephus was a really good authority. He did write some great stuff on the history. It's how we know a lot of things. But we also know things like areas of Josephus' history where he mentions the man Jesus are likely additional pieces that were added later by forgers. But the work isn't without its flaws. As for the book he references at the end of this paper, at the time of writing this paper, it was 1961, and this is about almost 20 years, written after the discovery of the library, the Nag Hammadi library, which where we find all of these Gnostic Christian texts. Now, there was never any text there that was found called Acts of Solomon. But we do know a few more things that this particular writer didn't add in his paper, right? So the Acts of Solomon is still lost, referenced in 1 Kings 11:41. And then later on, if we find in Chronicles 9:29 through 31, it actually names the writers of the Acts of Solomon. It says later on that the biblical prophet Iddo was the author of these lost texts, which were likely lost during the exile in Babylon. So just some additional pieces of context for you there with that article. I know a lot of times we read an article and we just kind of let it lie and enjoy it. But in this case, I think we just owed it to the audience here to give a little bit of additional context. Still, while there are flaws in the paper, I think that there are some really great elements to this paper which add to the flavor and romanticized legends that we portray within our fraternity. And so I think it's fun for that reason. It's very creative. And as I read it, you almost get the sense of, Jeff Goldblum or somebody kind of decoding this thing for you. But I hope you guys enjoyed it. We will, of course, have that paper as a downloadable content in the app.
I've been doing these Masonic Minutes for several years now, since 2015, to be exact. So just this once, allow me the indulgence of telling a personal story. My dad, Robert, was a member of Noblesville Lodge 57 in Indiana, the Indianapolis Scottish Rite, and Murat Shrine, where he was a fixture at lunch for many years. In the early 50s, he took a job in Indianapolis as a purchasing agent for a large tool and die company. That company, Wallace Tool and Die, invented a metal expansion process that revolutionized the industry. By the mid-1960s, the company was using that process to manufacture all the car doors for Ford Motor Company, all washing machine, dryer, and dishwasher casings for Westinghouse and Kenmore, most Ford car consoles, and many other such parts. In other words, the company hit the big time and incorporated as Wallace Expanding Machines, making Dad its secretary treasurer. One evening in the fall of 1975, Dad came home to find two men in suits standing on his front porch. One of the men had just taped a note to his front door, and they had turned to leave. The note said simply, "Please call Bob Sable, FBI," and gave a phone number. Dad stopped the car halfway down the drive, got out, and greeted the men. Sable introduced himself as an agent with the Indianapolis office of the FBI. Then he asked, "Mr. Harrison, what do you know about Lynette Fromm?" Well, Dad knew exactly who she was. Lynette Squeaky Fromm was all over the news. Earlier that week, she had aimed a gun at brother and President Gerald Ford and was apprehended without firing it. Other than that, Dad knew nothing of her. Agent Sable asked Dad a few other questions, wanting to know where he worked and what his position was with the company. Dad told him about his position at Wallace. It turned out Dad's position at Wallace, now an important player in the manufacturing industry, had earned him a listing in Standard & Poor's Directory of Corporate Executives, the National Edition. Sable went on to explain that in searching Squeaky's apartment after the incident, they found a mass mailing she was preparing, and all of the envelopes used Dad's home address as the mailing return address. The mailing also listed Dad's title as President of U.S. Natural Resources. Dad told them he had never heard of that company. Sable informed him their investigation had determined the Standard & Poor's directory had shown Dad as its president. It didn't take much in the discussion that followed to determine Dad had no relationship with either Squeaky or U.S. Natural Resources. Standard & Poor's affiliating him with U.S. Natural Resources was, in fact, a clerical error. Lynette Squeaky Frome, aside from being a kooky follower of Charles Manson, was a rabid environmentalist. In fact, she had gone to the Ford rally where she was arrested to try to plead with him to stop harvesting redwoods. Apparently, she thought U.S. Natural Resources had something to do with the environment, had looked it up in the Standard & Poor's directory, and that is how she got Dad's name. The conversation with the FBI sent Dad to his office, where he had filed the proof copy of his Standard & Poor's listing without paying much attention to it. Sure enough, right there under Other Current Affiliations, he found himself listed as the Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of U.S. Natural Resources. He filed the note from the FBI with it as a souvenir. Courts found Squeaky guilty of the attempted assassination of the President of the United States and sentenced her to life. She was paroled in 2009. The great irony for her is U.S. Natural Resources is a company that deals in sawmills and equipment to harvest trees, not save them, as the Squeakster must have assumed. The FBI was easily convinced Dad had nothing to do with Squeaky Frome and her misguided antics, and never bothered him again about it. But the affair always made a good story at cocktail parties and podcasts. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, many thanks to illustrious Brother Harrison for that awesome Masonic Minute. If you dig that, please check out the last few episodes of the podcast. We had a couple additional shows just recently. 2 weeks ago, we had another great Masonic Minute, as we do every other week or so. But last week on the program, we actually talked about Ray V. Denslow for over an hour with Brother Harrison, and I got multiple compliments on the show saying that you heard the music behind Steve as he talked, no matter what. So I just thought that was cool, and I did too, you guys. Steve is a remarkable gentleman. His books can be found on Amazon if you just check that out. Of course, I will have links to the Denslow book as well this week in the show notes, just as I did last week. So check it out. It's only $10 for over 800 pages of amazing history with great notes and commentary in there from illustrious Brother Harrison and other people associated with the Missouri Lodge of Research. If you want hard copies of the book, the best way to go about doing that is to join the Missouri Lodge of Research, and that's $25 a year, and you get a $35 book for free. It's like they're giving you $10. And then next year you'll get the second volume as part of your dues payment. Save $20 and join the Missouri Lodge of Research and help them out to continue their mission of Masonic education and preservation. The next piece I have for you this week is kind of an interesting one. It's the 12 original points of Masonry. This week is a little bit, quote-unquote, biblical. And I don't mean to sell any particular persuasion. I think you all know me well enough that I will present works on Masonry from any point of view, whether that is a Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, whatever that might be. Just keep that in mind. I'm not pushing a narrative or anything. Just presenting great papers. So from this angle, the 12 original points of Masonry. These are the 12 points, and the author of this piece is unknown. The 12 points were based upon the 12 sons of Jacob and symbolized the path of the candidate through his first degree. Now, again, before we continue with this piece, you can see this circular logic. I digress. Number one, opening of the lodge, refers to the tribe of Reuben, the firstborn of Jacob, the beginning of his strength. Without the opening, there would be no lodge. Two, preparation of the candidate, was to symbolize the tribe of Simeon, because Simeon prepared the instruments for slaughter of the Shemites. In part, it symbolizes the Masonic abhorrence to cruelty manifest in that event, being divested and devoid of all metallic objects. Number three, the report of the senior deacon refers to the tribe of Levi. Legend has it that Levi signaled his brother Simeon in the execution of the slaughter of the Shemites. Masonry denounces cruelty to a helpless people. 4. Entry of the candidate into the lodge symbolizes the tribe of Judah, for they were the first to cross the River Jordan, and alludes to the passing of the candidate from the wilderness of darkness into the land of light and liberty. 5. The prayer symbolizes the tribe of Zebulun, because the prayers and blessings of Jacob were given to indifference to his brother Issachar. 6. The circumambulation refers to the tribe of Issachar. Being somewhat shiftless in character, this tribe needed a special leader to advance them to the elevation equal to other tribes. 7. Advancing to the altar of Freemasonry symbolizes the tribe of Dan. It shows us that we should advance to truth and holiness with speed, in contrast to the rapid decline of Dan into idolatry. 8. The obligation refers to the tribe of Gad and alludes to the solemn vow made by Jephthah, judge of Israel, and a member of this tribe. 9. The entrusting with the mysteries of the order was symbolized by the tribe of Asher, for this tribe was presented with the full fruits of Masonic knowledge. 10. The investiture of the lambskin refers to the tribe of Naphtali, for this tribe was invested with a peculiar freedom by Moses in the prophecy, O Naphtali, satisfied with favor and full with blessings of the Lord, possessed thou the west and south. 11. Ceremony in the northeast corner refers to the tribe of Joseph and his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, heads of two half tribes. And 12. Closing of the lodge refers to the tribe of Benjamin, the youngest son of Jacob, thus closing his strength. So if you know your Old Testament and you found that interesting, I also found that interesting. There is so much that goes along with the 12 tribes, just in archetypes alone, across several systems. I mean, we even see elements of the New Testament. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John echo many of these same sentiments of 12. But of course, there's 13. Right? So there is this really interesting, I don't want to put the two words together, but I guess I will, intrinsic, meaning inner known, and holistic, not esoteric, but like holistic element to how this reads, and maybe assists us in understanding things in a different way, which of course is what an allegory is supposed to do for us anyway. So great job with this. That's going to be it for this week. I do want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you to our producers, our contributors, and our fellows who help us out on Patreon. So if you're wanting to assist this program, head on over to WCY's website, wcypodcast.com. Click on the tab that says support us on Patreon, and you can become a supporter. So you'll get your name on the website, or you can get a personalized card from me in the mail as a thank you, or you can even get both of those other things, plus a lapel pin, a producer's pin. And if Patreon is not your gig and you like PayPal, you can do all of that same stuff through PayPal. We've got both ways to do that on our website. And I want to thank everybody out there who is doing this constantly and consistently, month after month. Guys like Steve Harrison, who is a producer of this program also. If you want to see all of our producers, go to wcypodcast.com and click on the producers wall, or our fellows, contributors, and producers. We just can't do it without you guys. You really do make it possible, and I thank you so much for being the person you've entrusted to bring you Masonic education week after week, month after month, year after year. Thank you. Please don't forget about the Midnight Freemasons, publishing new articles Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. You heard me talk at the beginning of the program about Eric Mark's latest piece. It's fantastic. Earlier in the week, I kind of did a review of the Colorado Masonic Education Symposium. This week, I was just in contact with Right Worshipful Brother Dunn of Colorado, and he's going to get me the speech, and he'll read the speech for us on the program because it was so amazing. And then last Monday totally triggered this great memory I had a long time ago, and I probably talked about it on the program then, but Travis Simpkins, world-famous artist, Freemason, was doing some traveling, and he visited the lodge that is above the joint where Billy the Kid escaped from jail. And this was a really cool piece. You got to go to themidnightfreemasons.org and read this piece by Travis. I love the Old West, and I love Freemasonry, and it was just so interesting to read that he found this little replica lodge. And then that triggered this memory I had of course, when I was at the Colorado Masonic Symposium, I was sitting right across from the guy who did these awesome videos about Masonry in the Old West. And he was there at the conference in Colorado. So it's like, I went to this conference, I sat across from the guy who made these great Western Freemasonry videos years ago that I talked about on the program, and then here comes Travis writing about Masonry in the Old West the Monday after I get home. And so what do? Of course, I send Travis an email saying, here's these videos. I don't know if you've ever seen them before, but it was just cool. So I geeked out a little bit with Travis's piece, and he writes for us all the time. He's got a piece coming up this upcoming week also. So he had one last week. He'll have another one this week, so I hope you guys check that out. And, of course, if you like Masonic podcasts, do not forget that we go live every Thursday at 9:30, 8:30 Central for the Masonic Roundtable, right on YouTube. You can watch it on Facebook Live, all these things, and interact with us right there on the air. That's it. I think I'm going to go watch some television. It is late. And if you guys know, you have kids. I've got four of them, and I never get to watch any TV anymore. Everything is always on cartoons, which I love, but I'm probably going to go watch cartoons and drink some bubbly water and eat a candy bar or something. Probably not what I should be doing this late at night, but I hope you all have a wonderful week. Stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.